When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lumos.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Shell Cottage Radio. I'm your host, Ezra, a.k.a. Bill, also known as Sir Ezra the Watchful, History of Magic Professor, the Flannel Wizard, obviously. Yours truly, me. Please welcome your lovely design witch, the fascination of this year, Triwizard Champion herself, and my wonderful co-host and yours, Lottie, a.k.a. Fleur.
Hallo und einen wunderschönen guten Tag. It's so good to have you back in our beautiful little cottage on the outskirts of Tinworth. Kommt rein und macht's euch gemütlich. Welcome to episode 86, in which we discuss Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. This week, we will talk about Chapter 7, Bagman and Crouch. We'll give you a quick life update with our homemade cottage ketchup, feed our brains with important trivia knowledge, and then dive head on into our chapter summary audio experience. And as this episode drops on Wednesday, this upcoming Wednesday, happy Labor Day to all our listeners from Germany.
Happy Labor Day,
yay!
Everybody.
It's May 1st. That's Labor Day in Germany. So every year, May 1st, we get a day off. And it doesn't matter. Sometimes it's Sunday, and that sucks because then, you know, you would have the day off anyway. So
right.
I don't know. In the United States, is it always... They make sure it's during the week, right?
Yeah, Labor Day, I guess it's a Monday.
It's always a Monday, so it's not a certain date, but it's the first Monday in some... When is it?
I don't know.
It's like the first holiday.
Yeah.
Of the school year.
Yes.
So
September or something.
Anyway.
Third.
Hopefully you guys in Germany can enjoy the day today and you have good weather. Lots of people go out on like bike tours or hiking trips or barbecues. So yeah, definitely. It's always a thing to enjoy May the 1st. But we're also going to enjoy May the 4th.
Let's go.
Happy upcoming Star Wars Day, guys.
Holy smokes. Let me see how this looks on camera right now. So I just went, oh, wow.
Oh, you hit the microphone.
Look at this bad boy.
That's pretty cool.
Look at this bad boy.
Bill has a lightsaber now. So he actually has... three lightsabers now.
One's on the way.
Two here, one is on the way. And yeah, he's growing his lightsaber collection. Two, I saw that. That was for the editor later.
I gave a little wink to the camera. So I look pretty good right now. I got a lot. This is a pretty dashing photo of myself holding this lightsaber.
Mm. Would you say yellow would be your lightsaber color?
I like this yellow gold kind of vibe here. This is sort of like a greenish. Mm-hmm.
Has a greenish tint to it, yeah.
Can you guys hear that on the podcast? I'm deflecting blaster bolts.
Yeah, I see that.
May the 4th be with you.
May the force be with you.
May the stew be with you.
Mm-hmm. This guy's brewing a new stew, and it's the stew of his life.
It is the stew of my life, and I want you guys to join, by the way. So what is brewing here in the cottage is a kind of a muddy, dirty, rooty, earthy stew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is a Yoda stew.
Yes.
Okay? So thank you for letting me shout this little project out here on our Harry Potter project. But I'm also doing a full-time, you know.
Yeah.
It's my whole... It's like literally the next 30 years of my life, hopefully. I'm going to be doing a Star Wars podcast.
Yes.
So we had a Star Wars podcast and converted it, changed it, kind of wrecked the RSS feed a little bit. It's there's some problems. I think I messed it up.
Yeah.
So I was happy to kind of just start fresh. I think I even, you know, in starting that whole project, I rushed it and everything too, mm-hmm. and I just wasn't ready to didn't give it time, didn't meditate on it,
yeah.
Stepped away from it, stepped into other fandoms, tried to do different things, and I was like, no, I really just like doing Star Wars.
Yeah.
So I am definitely doing that, and I know some of you do listen to that project as well, or listen to our other one. So yeah, there's Yoda Stew. We'll put a link in the description. It's in our link tree. It's up. There are two episodes. We're going to record an episode this coming week, actually. Two episodes.
Yes.
So we're excited. May the 4th be with you.
Yes.
Which, I mean, it's not there yet, but by the time you guys hear this, it's like Star Wars weekend.
Yeah.
It's like Star Wars week. So.
I mean, that's my question, though. Like, in the Wizarding world, let's assume it, you know, Bill, do they ever read, this just came to me, in Muggle studies, do they ever read Muggle literature? Do they go into Muggle stories and explore them and,
so,
you know,
guys,
learn more about Muggles through their stories?
This is going to sound kind of crazy, but in the Muggle world, they read a story about us.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That witch pretended to be a Muggle and that she just made all this up, but
right.
She's just telling them all about us. So.
Right.
And they, first of all, they wanted to shut it down because it's against the statue of secrecy.
Not very secret. It's a statue. Okay. Yeah.
But they accepted the fact that she sold it as a story, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I tried to tell myself when I was little. I was like, this is all real.
It's real.
George Lucas traveled to a galaxy far, far away.
Now, that is real,
right? Yeah.
That is real, actually.
Second question for me to you, Bill. Question relating to, again, Labor Day and the Muggle world. Something I thought about the other day just randomly, and I wanted to hear your thoughts on it, is have you ever thought about wizards or witches working Muggle jobs where they think, I want to live a Muggle life. I don't want to have a job at the ministry. I don't want to be a professional Quidditch player. I don't want to study magical beasts. I don't want to have a job in the wizarding world. I majored in Muggle studies, and I thought it was so cool, and maybe they've met a Muggle and now have a family. So they are Muggle born, and they say, you know what? Let's say Hermione wanted to take over her parents' dentist practice and uses her magic in secret to kind of enhance her practice, you know, being a dentist without letting the Muggles know that come to her. I feel like, I'm doing the thing where I ask you a question and then I answer my own question without hearing your thoughts again, but I have it written down. We talked about interrogators, you know, if you're a legitimate, all that stuff. So, sorry, let me give it over to you. What are your thoughts on this? It's never talked about in the book, so what do you think?
So I would say, I think all of us know someone like this, all right? You have the guy who shows up, your plumbing is all messed up, and you call the plumber, nobody else can get it, you've had issues with it, and this guy walks in here, miracle worker, done in five minutes, done. Here's one, here's a real one.
So good, actually.
This really happened to me. When I had my condo, all of a sudden my dryer stopped working. Like, my dryer was just done. I don't know why, it wasn't working, it was kaput.
Mm, yeah, kaput.
You know? And so called a guy. He came out, looked at it. He just did a couple tests. I was like, here it is, man. Take a look. He went in. He was in there for, I think, probably 2 minutes. That's it.
Okay.
I didn't hear him take any. He did not pull a single tool out of his tool belt.
What?
Not a single tool. Not a single tool. And he fixed my dryer.
Wow.
Now, some of you might be laughing because you know what mistake has made, okay? But
they just really like slap the dryer a little bit and then
come on, dryer.
Sometimes
come on,
have to give it a good slap,
right?
And then
boom,
starts working again.
So
he was a wizard.
But here's what happened. So I went in there and he gave me. I mean, I'm sure he did extra magic because clearly I'm not this, you know. Clearly, I know to check this one thing, but he told me that I hadn't been checking the lint spot thing on the you know, where you pull out the little thing and the lint's in there. And so my problem was that the dryer had no heat. It was working, but it wasn't. There was no heat.
Yeah.
And so he was like, "There's your problem, buddy, right there." And I had all this. I hadn't checked it in months. Could have started a fire, actually. So just so you guys know, make sure you're checking that. I was a Brit. I was young. I was in my early 20s. I was like, we got, like, check that thing? Like, what? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, man. And I was like, that guy's magic, man. Yeah. Like, he didn't even pull out a tool.
Yeah.
He just got paid like $200 or something to come in here and do what I should have been doing for months.
Yep.
So there you go. Awesome. That was a wizard.
But yeah, I love that thought, though, of like thinking about wizards and witches who, you know, can use their magic skills secretly to help out muggles and be part of the muggle world. Why not?
Yep.
Mrs. Fig, what did she do for a living before she joined the order? And kind of, she seems like she's at a retired age, right? But what did she do? Did she work for wizards and witches? Did she work in the wizarding world or did she work in the muggle world? Did she work at all? I don't know.
Don't know. But I think it's good question. I mean, I do think when you think of the miracle workers, the people who do something that you just are a job that's really difficult.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, how did they do that?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they got a little magic wand. They're hiding from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, sometimes I think, you know, people like who can fix problems with your computer and stuff, they also seem magical.
Yeah, like, agreed.
Yeah, we talked about interrogators using legilimens to figure out if they're lying or not. You could use a lot of different wizarding skills as a teacher as well to keep your kids under control. Thinking about if you could... I'm trying to think, was there someone like, you know, Alice and Jasper from Twilight, and Jasper who can kind of control moods and like make the room feel like calm and quiet. Wasn't there someone
so like a calming charm that they could on the class?
I feel like they did.
That'd be cool.
There is something like
that Hermione was studying.
Hermione wasn't there, right?
She missed it.
Yes.
It was in Prisoner of Azkaban.
What was it?
And it was some sort of soothing
thing. All like really happy or cheering charm. Cheering charm.
Because the Dementors.
They're all cheerful.
There we go.
Yes.
There we go.
That's it. Hey, that could be a trivia question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, do you have a trivia question for today?
I do. Yeah.
Let's see if we have the same one, because I have one too for you.
Oh, do you really?
Is it from this chapter?
Maybe.
Uh-oh. We probably have the same one.
No, okay. I doubt it.
You want to start with your question?
Are we ready for trivia? Are we?
I don't know. Do you have more ketchup?
No. Do you?
No.
Okay.
Let's get into the mustard.
All right. Let's do it. I'm starting?
You're starting.
My start. Okay.
Gong.
Okay. Who is the head of the Goblin Liaison Office?
We don't have the same question.
Who is the head of the Goblin Liaison Office at the time of the Quidditch World Cup?
So I know there's so many... Okay. There was a couple of... names mentioned in this chapter, you know, lots of ministry workers walking by there. Wait, I know what you're going to say. Thanks, you gave me a hint because I'm going to remember his first name, but not his second name.
Dang.
Because his freaking first name is Cuthbert.
Dang, good job. Yeah, Cuthbert.
Because that's the only name that kind of stuck out to me, except for the Unspeakables, because I'm going to say something about them later on.
Good thing I didn't ask about them.
No, because I remember their name. But Cuthbert, can you give me his first letter, the first letter of his last name?
M.
Cuthbert. Muriel.
Did you even read this chapter? Did you even read this chapter? What is up, you guys?
Yeah,
I'm kidding.
There's
so
much in this chapter. So many names.
Come on.
Cuthbert. Menard.
No. Cuthbert
Mullard.
Mockridge.
Mockridge. Oh.
Good old Mockridge. What a good name, too.
Mockridge.
Cuthbert Mockridge.
Yeah.
Mr. Head
Cuthbert.
Of the Goblin Liaison Office.
Do you get half a point?
Yeah, you get half a point. Okay. We can do point fives. That's fine.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
My question for you is, and this, you might know this question. So who was, we know there was different campsites.
Right.
Who was... the Diggory's campsite manager. What was his name?
Payne. Payne, right? It was something.
Yeah.
Mr. Roberts was theirs, and then Payne was for the Diggory's.
Very good. And, yeah, Mr. Payne.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Very good. So we have 1 point for you and half a point for Fleur. That makes it right now 6.5 to 7. Okay.
Okay.
6.5 to 7, and now we have to do the cards. We need the dice. Okay, so do you want to go first?
Yep, here we go.
So I read the question. The yellow. According to Aunt Muriel, what serious crime did Professor Dumbledore's father commit? Cool question.
Aunt Muriel said that he had harassed or attacked a muggle. That he had assaulted. Assault.
Okay. I think this is worth half a point. Because the answer is he killed three muggles.
He killed them?
According to Aunt Muriel, what serious crime did Professor Dumbledore's father commit? He killed three muggles.
Dang.
This is movie trivia, so not sure if this is the same in the book, but yeah.
I didn't think so, but...
So, but you're right, there was the connection to the muggles, but I will give you half a point.
Okay, I'll take half a point.
So, as of right now, it is 7.5 to 6.5, and I want the color green.
It looks like blue.
This is blue.
Oh my gosh, it's green. Okay. Which creature aids in the escape of Harry, Ron, and Hermione from Gringotts? And I want to know specifically.
The exact name of the dragon? Is the exact dragon given to you?
Wait, are you saying it's a dragon?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to know the exact kind. Do you know the exact kind? That's what the question said. It said, name the exact kind of dragon that...
What does the answer on the back say?
Can't tell you. Until you guess.
So in the movie, the dragon was kind of white-ish.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is the one that is literally up on top of at Universal, right?
Yeah.
Breathing fire down on everybody, so yeah. You guys all need to know this.
It was a...
Which country was it from?
Let me think.
Uh-huh.
Not Ireland. Britain. We have the Hungarian horntail. It was not... Norwegian Richback, that's Norbert. It's not Chinese, it's not Indian. I'd say it's a Taiwanese. No, I know it's not that. I don't know why. The white dragon makes me think of the Far East, China and Japan and
nope, yeah. Not even close.
What?
You ready?
So it's in Europe?
Yeah.
Ah.
It is a Ukrainian iron belly dragon.
Oh, I thought about Bulgaria. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool, right? Ukrainian what? Iron belly?
Ukrainian iron belly. That's what they say.
Did Ron know that because of Charlie?
Don't know.
Or did the goblin say that?
I don't know if this actually came out afterwards or what the deal, if they just decided that later on, but I mean, once you put a dragon on top of your...
Right.
You
kind of have to know that.
You need to know what it is.
But the movie trivia only asks for the type of creature and it didn't ask for the full... name.
Oh, did you read the card?
Give me the card.
Okay, so you got 1 point. Good
Yay!
Job.
It says a dragon.
Dragon!
Awesome. So that means we are tied again, friends. And this time Lottie did not make a mistake. So we went from 6 to 6 to 7.5 to 7.5. So tied again. This is pretty fun. I think we should have, like, at the end of the book, at the end of each book, we have a winner.
Okay.
We have to determine, like, what we're going to do, what the winner, I don't know, gets, or what the loser has to do. Maybe you guys have suggestions.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you do. This book, I think we're going to have, the trivia is easy. So, it'll be easy trivia, and then next book, maybe we need to take it up a notch.
Yeah.
Okay.
But your question with Cuthbert was not very easy, okay?
But you didn't ask me... Well, yeah,
Lockridge.
You did. Yeah, you did. So.
No, good thing we are learning. It's always a learning opportunity, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have to see it as.
Yeah.
Okay, are we ready? Oops. Are we ready for the chapter summary?
Let's go. Chapter 7, Bagman and Crouch. Harry, Hermione, the Weasleys, and the Diggerys have just arrived via Portkey at the moor where Mr. Weasley has reserved a campsite for the Quidditch World Cup. They are greeted by very tired wizards, one of whom knows Mr. Weasley and directs them to their site, while Amos and Cedric head off to their own spot. At the site, they encounter Mr. Roberts, the Muggle campsite manager, who is puzzled by the sudden influx of reservations and the odd behaviors of the guests. He even asks Mr. Weasley if he's from abroad, as he clearly has trouble counting the right amount of English money to pay for their spot. At that moment, a wizard apparates out of thin air and quickly casts an Obliviate spell on Mr. Roberts to prevent him from remembering too much. He points out how challenging and exhausting it is to keep secrecy from the Muggles during such a large wizarding event. Harry and Hermione help Mr. Weasley set up two tents without using any magic, just like a Muggle would. Harry's jaw drops when he enters one of the tents. What looks like a two-man tent from outside turns out to be magically expanded from the inside. He walks into an entire apartment with three rooms and a kitchen. Arthur is so excited to try out new Muggle activities that he insists they cook lunch over a fire outside instead of using the tent's built-in kitchen. So Harry, Hermione, and Ron are sent to the other side of the campsite to fetch some water. The three happily explore the campgrounds, filled with wizarding families and decorations supporting their nation's Quidditch team. They run into friends from Hogwarts, including Seamus Finnegan and Dean Thomas. The air is filled with excitement as fans from all over the world gather, including those supporting the Bulgarian team. Ron explains to Harry and Hermione why the Bulgarians all decorated their tents with large pictures of the same player. It's Viktor Krum, the Bulgarian seeker and prodigy. He is only 18 years old, yet already a legend. Hermione does not seem very impressed by his grim appearance, but Ron outs himself as a superfan and defends him. When they finally reach the faucets, they fill up their pots and pans with water and set off to return to the tents. On the way back, they see more school friends such as Oliver Wood and Cho Chang. They even spot other teenagers from foreign wizarding schools. Back at their camp spot, they help Mr. Weasley start a fire to boil some water for tea and cook lunch. While they wait for the fire to get hot enough, a lot of Ministry wizards walk past their spot, greeting Arthur from afar. Just as they start cooking eggs and sausage, Percy, Charlie, and Bill arrive. And then they are joined by Ludo Bagman himself, who is the head of the Department of Magical Games and Sports. His bright yellow and black Quidditch robes make it very clear that he is not concerned about anti-Muggle security whatsoever. He appears to be a fun, playful chap, encouraging Arthur to place bets on the match. But then it's the twins who bet all their pocket money that Ireland will win, but Krum will catch the snitch. Mr. Weasley is not happy about it, but Bagman quickly takes them up on their offer. Arthur also brings up Bertha Jorkins, who is still missing from Ludo's department, but he dismisses concerns about her whereabouts and assures them that she'll turn up soon. Then Percy's boss, the stiff and formal Barty Crouch, appears. He mistakenly calls Percy Weatherby, much to the amusement of Fred and George. He is there to collect Bagman to settle a request for some additional premium seats made by the Bulgarians. As they're about to leave, Ludo hints at another big upcoming event taking place at Hogwarts this year, but he is reprimanded by Crouch for nearly revealing classified information. As anticipation for the World Cup finally builds through the afternoon, vendors start to appear all over the campsite selling merchandise to the crowd. The kids excitedly check out all of the magical fan items. Harry generously buys omnioculars for himself, Ron, and Hermione. Ron is a bit embarrassed to accept such an expensive item from his friend. But when Harry promises he won't get anything for Christmas for the next 10 years, Ron grins and happily takes a pair. A gong sounds over the entire campsite, and a path leading to the Quidditch field magically lights up. Geared up in green Irish merch, the Weasleys, Harry, and Hermione start walking towards the stadium, all of them glowing with bright anticipation.
Whew. This is so exciting! I mean, this is a really, really cool chapter that's just world building. It's building excitement for a big event. It's crazy that they crammed in two big events so quickly after another. It almost feels like a World Cup and the Olympics. I don't think they ever have that in. Do they ever have that in the same year? I don't know. I actually don't know if it's never happened before, because they all, both of them are every 4 years, so maybe they're not in the same year. But it feels like it's, you know, two events of that caliber that are taking place in such close proximity from another. So definitely a fantastic chapter to build that excitement. And I think it's wonderful that finally Harry gets to see so much more of the wizarding world.
Right.
So he's like, I have never thought about foreign wizards, about other wizarding schools in other countries, or I've never seen young wizards, like, you know, two-year-olds playing with their, you know, broomsticks or with daddy's wand. And
Jiminy.
And yeah, I think it's just a really, really fun chapter to, A, just see more people out there, to do some world building, and to also drive the story forward with Mr. Crouch and Mr. Bagman showing up. And
yeah,
they're two very important characters, as we learn later, especially for the big big next event coming up.
Right.
Yeah, but we start off, they reach the campsite, and first thing you noticed, it was pretty funny, that a large party, so they just arrived with their portkey, and they have to get out of there, basically, because there is another big party coming in from the Black Forest. Because we have a Black Forest, den Schwarzwald, in Germany, of course. Mm-hmm, so you were like, well, how cool is that?
Germans are coming right behind us.
They're, you know, the Germans are coming.
Here they are. Big old party coming from the Black Forest.
That'd be so
fun. You can hear it as, like, the Weasleys are kind of moving away.
Yeah.
That party pops in there, and they're like, wo ist meine Hause? Wo ist das Stadium? You know?
Yeah. Wo sind die Zelte? Where are the tents?
Yeah.
Wo ist das Stadion? Where's the stadium? Yeah.
You can just hear them in the distance, you know? Kind of giving some.
Where's the stadium here? I want to see the stadium.
Oh my, that was good. Wow.
Then Mr. Weasley is having trouble counting the muggle money. So they're trying to act like they're muggles, right? Mr. Weasley's prepared. He wants to try different muggle activities later, and he dressed as a muggle. But then he forgot to prepare with the muggle money. And the only muggle in probably miles around here is the campsite manager.
Yeah.
So he has no clue who they are, but he gets suspicious all the time. Like, people come in, they act weird, they dress weird, they don't know how to count money. Yes.
Wait a minute, though. Yeah. Is Payne, is he also a muggle, or is just Mr. Roberts?
I'm assuming Payne is also a muggle. I'm assuming they all work there all year long. That's their campsite, and they have different... Gotcha. I just feel like it's a spot where people would come anyway.
Yeah.
But for some reason, they must have placed some charms onto this place so that muggles don't book that place during that time, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so they only want wizards in the camps. But the campsite manager, they kind of have to deal with them and act like,
right,
you know, everyone's a muggle here. But clearly that fails, because people like Mr. Weasley, they don't know how to deal with the English money. And it seems like maybe odd to Mr. Roberts, because it sounds like Arthur is British, mm-hmm. but then he doesn't know how to pay in British with British money. But I want to just talk about real quick, like, foreign money bills. They, to me, like, the bills, the dollar bills, they're fine because they have large numbers on there. But it's the coins that throw me off, because for some reason you guys don't put numbers on the coins. You have like tiny, like 5 cents, like in words on there. There's no number five on there, but I have to try to read. I mean, you can kind of learn when you're a kid, you learn the sizes of the coins, right? But then it's so weird to me, that I have to like go in and read. The dime is very small also.
I get your like eyepiece, I get your like magnifying glass and kind of,
Bet when you're older, like I used to work as a cashier for years during my college years. And I remember, you know, the elderly people, they didn't like to pay with card. They like to have cash.
Yeah.
And they would always have trouble, even in like euros where you have the numbers on there. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they're so small, they had trouble seeing them.
Right. Making
so
sure they're giving
I felt
the right
bad
thing.
For them.
Yeah.
And imagine Arthur here. I guess in the wizarding world, they don't have bills, right? They have, they don't have paper bills. They only have the coins.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why he's having trouble with the bills.
Right.
With the paper. He's like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think when we went to Costa Rica, that was interesting. Yes. Their money was a little bit different, and just sort of, it sounds like it's a lot more just the way they.
Yes.
But it really wasn't. And I was, you know, struggling to kind of understand how it.
Yep. How it converts. Right.
Yeah.
Same with like, I went to Korea, for example, with my friend Julia, and their won is. The numbers are way higher. Like 10,000 won is not that huge.
10,000.
Like you just have, you know, you're a millionaire pretty quickly. And
it's like, man.
I guess, like, yeah.
Just sounds like a big number.
It sounds like a big number, but then, yeah, you have to. Even then, yeah, you feel like you know how to handle bills. Even then, they have the numbers on it, but then you have trouble like figuring out. Okay, do we have 10,000 and 1,000 to spot that difference between the numbers of the amount of zeros on there? So
right.
I get it that Mr. Weasley is like, oh no, I didn't prepare for that. Harry, help me real quick.
Right, and he's still worried about actually making sure that they are good, that they're not raising suspicion.
Yeah, he pulls him away from that cottage where Mr. Roberts sits at. And he's not the only one who's been having trouble, right? He's getting suspicions.
Oi, you fooling? You fooling? Like, he's like So
he seems very friendly.
What you could have done is somebody could have just handed a bunch of money and said, "Here you go. Wait to see the response." So they start to give you change. Okay, then I gave plenty. Yep. And I see this with kids sometimes. They don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they've got like, how do I put this? Let's say it's like, I don't know, $6 or something, and you have a 10, but you give a 20, or you give way more, because you're like, I don't know, or something.
And
I could see where you could just give more, and then they're going to give you some change back, or say, actually, hey, you keep that 20, I'll just take this 10, I'll give you 4. But, you know, little things like where maybe they just don't understand. You could have done it that way.
Yeah, I guess like to Mr. Weasley, it was a little harder to understand that the bills are actually worth more than the coins, because it feels like in the Wizarding World, the bigger coins, the gold coins, the galleons are worth the most. And then you're like, oh, this is just paper. How's this worth more than the coins?
Right.
But anyway, so he definitely.
Yeah, give me that paper money.
Right.
Man.
Yeah. I blame the ministry a little bit that they didn't create like little info sheets for people who signed up, who got tickets. Mm-hmm. With their tickets, I feel like they should have gotten like little info sheets where it says, this is how muggles would dress. Okay, so make sure you bring, as a man, as we see later with Archie,
he did not
know what muggle men wear versus women. So as a man, you would dress like this. As a woman, you would dress like this. Then make sure this is muggle money when they, you know, when you pay for it, make sure you know this is a $20 or, you know, pounds bill. Something like that helps them keep that secrecy up. How are they supposed to know if they are like Mr. Weasley from a big wizarding family? And I mean, Mr. Weasley should be an exception because that's his job, working with muggle artifacts, was kind of paradox, but, other wizarding families who have never really had anything to do with muggles a whole lot, they should get some information, I feel like, from the ministry. So, yeah.
Yeah. But they're really only, they're just popping over and obliviating this dude, which I kind of feel bad for.
Yeah.
Because, like, he's going to come out of that. Imagine the headache you might have.
Yes.
After a whole weekend of this. I think it's kind of wrong.
I feel like it's bad for your memory. It definitely doesn't sound healthy for Mr. Roberts here. And also my question is, how do they, in this chapter, how do they know? It seems like the wizard somehow knows what's going on and operates at the exact same moment or at the right time to the right place. Is there a charm they placed on Mr. Roberts where it's like a, you know, alarm going off, or they can hear him somehow, like an almost like the extendable ears that the Weasleys use, but as a charm put on somebody?
Yeah.
So you can kind of hear it. The conversation, because what are the odds that this guy turns up exactly when Mr. Roberts is about to
find
out what's going on, right?
Yeah, you're right. They're monitoring him, and they're checking in to see what type of conversation is being had. He's even recalling a few conversations back where people tried to pay with certain types of, I don't know, what were they talking about, hubcaps or something, like some big round cylinder things. And, you know, so that means that, like, when they came and they obliviated him, he still is remembering. He might, if we followed him, if we tracked him for the next couple customers to come through here, he might remember another guy who forgot and had trouble with money. So how often are they popping over and modifying his memory? It's kind of crazy. And it doesn't seem to be sticking too well, because there's all these reminders that keep kind of popping up, and he can connect it to a memory that's buried somewhere deep. And that's causing him to recall strange things.
Yeah, it seems like Obliviate only works with your subconsciousness and your consciousness. So your conscious memory, that's where it probably, they erase it from the conscious memory. But I feel like it's still somewhere in the subconscious mind, because as last time we read about the muggle who was teleported via portkey. Oh no, that might be in the extendable ear edition. But there was a muggle transported via portkey accidentally to a Celestina Warbeck concert.
Yeah, okay,
and then they obliviated him, but then he remembered some parts of it. He wrote a song that was very close to what Celestina's song sounded like in the muggle world. So there's clearly something that stuck to his subconscious mind. And I think that's what's happening here. That it's way easier for him to remember or to get that feeling of, I've heard this or seen this before, that someone has trouble counting money. So
I wonder if then Lockhart has an extra special gift in terms of like being able to go deep inside, you know, someone's memory.
There's an Obliviator, like a professional Obliviator, mentioned in this chapter later by Arthur Weasley.
It's his job.
Why is Lockhart not one of those guys?
He wanted to be more than that. He wanted to be grandiose and legendary.
He could have been.
He could have been a world-class Obliviator.
Yes.
And had studied it and had come up with new techniques
about
and
it.
Everything.
And,
everything.
Lockhart, you missed your calling.
Yeah, it's kind of wild.
Just like Barty Crouch Jr. missed his calling as a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Mr. Roberts, he's Obliviated. They get to the campsite, and there is some stuff to share. I was going to ask you, actually, because Mr. Weasley is so excited. Let's do this by hand, like real muggles.
Let's go.
Can you build a tent, and have you ever done it? Have you ever been camping and stuff?
I have pitched a tent.
Okay.
And I do know how to pitch a tent, and I could do, yeah, I absolutely do.
You could?
Yeah. We used to have as a kid, they were a little bit different. They were kind of these poles that had like little metal kind of binders.
Yeah.
And you would sort of clip them all together, but the poles were in segments,
mm-hmm.
and they were a little bit like not elastic, but kind of, they had some flexibility to them.
Yeah.
And you would just really, this was kind of for kids, and you would just sort of thread them through the tent.
Yeah, these rounded tents.
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Right. And yep. So they would bend.
Through, and then you.
Right. And then, yep, tap them in the ground. Yeah. Pretty easy. I was like,
yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
That's
so
what we did too. Yeah.
It sounds like what they were doing though was that more sort of your triangle
yeah.
style tent, more old fashioned thing with wooden,
yeah,
like
you have
the
to
wooden
fix
mallet and
all
the
four corners and
yeah.
have the middle part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a little bit different. And have I ever done that? No.
Yeah, same.
No, mm-hmm. not done that. But would be cool to try at
yes.
some point. So now I've made a tent in the living room for my niece and nephew.
Aww.
You know, I mean, I've
yes,
on,
we all built like with
it's camping.
You get some chairs and you get big blankets and you build your little house or your little tent inside the living room.
Is it called? I mean, I don't know. I guess so. I mean, I one time was out with my uncle John out in Oregon.
Yeah,
and we were camping. I guess we had our own little fire and campsite.
Mm-hmm.
And we were camping under the stars, no tent.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Just
never done that before.
Sleeping bags.
I always saw it in Pokemon. They always did that. They just
yeah.
had the sleeping bags. Or we see in Avatar, Last Airbender,
yeah.
we see them just sleeping in their sleeping bags
right.
under the stars.
Right. So this was wild. I mean,
yeah.
I was up there with my Uncle John on top of a mountain. I mean, we were in the remote. The moon
yeah.
was out, full moon. It was crazy.
Without any mattresses, though, was that tough on the back?
We just had a big old blanket inside of the sleeping bag, and
yeah.
we were right there on near a cliffside, and
yeah.
it was just rock.
Wow.
It was just rock underneath us, you
yeah.
know? So it was crazy. I remember I stayed up till almost like 2 or 3 in the morning, and I was up with him. We were talking, just chatting it up, and the amount of creatures
mm-hmm.
coming through the night and stuff. And I asked him, I was like, Uncle John, you know, like, what if something out here or whatever?
Yeah.
He's like, and he literally was just like, I'm making sure I promised your mom that I'd keep you guys safe. He's like, why do you think I'm still up? And I was like, oh, yeah, he was scared. I was like, oh, what? And lo and behold, we were way out there. And I was sort of shocked at
yeah.
when I look back at the region that we were in, we were nowhere near like civilization.
Yeah.
I don't even know how we got there. He is a mountain man. He lives, there's no electricity at his home. He lives like off of the running water,
off-grid,
the creek nearby,
yeah.
off grid, totally
wow.
off grid. And he was quite the impressive.
It's interesting. It's individual. Definitely, it feels
yeah.
safer to have someone like that with you
oh,
who
yeah.
knows the area and knows how to deal with all that.
I mean, things that I heard in the woods in the night or whatever.
Coyotes?
He knew it was an elk.
Grizzlies?
I think it was an elk or something. It ended up being deer or elk, and he knew exactly what they were. And I was like,
okay.
Or he was just telling me
to
that
make
it
you feel
was.
Better, yeah.
Because I was about to, you know,
yeah.
wet my pants. I mean, I was.
I
was,
bet.
I
mean,
nervous.
It's different for I think for little kids, definitely, to even if you do it like in the backyard for the first time, it's exciting, but you're not in a remote area. You still like you can, you know, the house is like 10 feet away and you can just walk into a house.
Oh.
If you get bored of like or you get scared.
Can I tell you something?
Yes.
We camped in the back right at my dad's house
yeah.
in the backyard with my cousins and stuff. And here's how it went.
Yeah.
We all were out there chilling, doing our thing. You know, we live by a creek, so there's a creek
yeah,
out there.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Awesome. But there are tons of raccoons, tons of possums.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And sure enough, one of them just brushed by the tent.
Oh, no.
Right. I was like, we're all good, right? Then somebody had to go to the bathroom. Then that person never came back from the bathroom.
They went inside and
the next person went and they never came back. Then the next person. There was like four or five of us in this tent. And then like I'm out there by myself. I'm just like,
oh,
anybody coming back? Like, and I just was like, fine, you know. And so did I sprint? Did I sprint from the edge of the tent to the back porch?
Yeah.
Fastest I'd ever ran in my life. Because I knew there were raccoons and possums and monsters and scary things out there, you know? So. Yeah.
I know, I get it. It can be a little scary because it's not really remote, but you don't, the next neighbor is kind of far away. So I get it.
Anyway.
I have never really done remote camping. But this, because it's a whole campsite, right? So there's multiple, you're not out in the woods camping by yourself. There's tons of tents. They say it's described as a whole city of tents.
Yeah.
And this reminds me a little bit of some volleyball outdoor tournaments that we would play on the weekend just for fun. They were either on the grass, and we have like big courts on grass, and you play like the typical 6-against-6 style, or our beach volleyball tournaments at the beaches, like at the Baltic Sea, where you play 2-against-2, like beach volleyball style.
Yeah.
And both of them, you know, you would camp either around the courts when you were on the grass or near the beach. And that was always so fun because everyone was there who would play in the tournament, and you would just sit around a fire at night and talk and get ready for the tournament. And then during the day, everyone just plays their tournament, and some just go there for absolutely having a blast and don't care where they end up. And some are more professional and they play for money. Especially the beach volleyball tournaments, there were just for fun. The grass tournaments were just to have a blast and meet your friends there. But that was the same type of the energy of everyone's here together. You have a tent, you go get your water from somewhere. Everyone has snacks. I love how it's described here, how everyone decorates their tent because they're magical and they can add little gardens with a bird bath or whatever that's called in the front yard. And they put, I don't know, the African wizards who just roast a rabbit over a purple fire and stuff like that. Like bringing your little personality to your campsite, and then people who, I don't know, just from different parts of the world just sitting around the same fire. It's just so cool.
Yeah.
To imagine this scene.
Cool environment.
Yeah.
Right.
Harry and Hermione actually help Mr. Weasley set up the tent, and then when they walk in, they can't believe it because they stare at the two men tents, and they're like, what, seven? I don't know how many people. Ten people. And Hermione and Harry are like, should we tell him now that, you know,
it
might not be enough? Or
right.
Are we going to sleep under the stars? So they're not sure. But then when they walk in, it's great. It's like a whole apartment or flat situation where they all have room and the kitchen and everything. And it's so funny how it's described as looks exactly like Mrs. Figg's house from the inside. And I was like, okay, who lent him the tent? That was Perkins.
Right.
And Perkins is his colleague. Like he works under Mr. Weasley for the misuse of Muggle artifacts office.
Yeah. And so you know what the connection there?
Uh-huh. Tell me.
They were dating.
I feel like there is some connection
they
to Mrs. Figg, you know?
They were a thing.
Even though I don't know how old he is, so I've tried to find out.
Mrs. Figg and Perkins were dating.
Hang on. So born sometime before 1975, Mrs. Figg is definitely older than him. I feel like if he's a subordinate of Arthur Weasley, you would feel like he's not super old, but also not super young. And he even came to Fleur and Bill's wedding.
Really?
Yeah.
Perkins
he was
did,
there,
huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
And we definitely meet him again when Harry has his trial. He's in the office.
Yeah. Isn't he the one in the movie carrying the box and he in and he's got
Have you used her? Oh my gosh. Sorry. Just made the connection. I never realized that this tent they use later by like Harry, Ron, and Hermione when they search for the Horcruxes.
Wow.
They use Perkins' tent.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I guess he never gave it back, and they just used it. That's so cool.
Does Perkins realize how much he contributed to the destruction of Lord Voldemort?
No.
Does he get like some sort of reward or something for this? I mean, the tent that sheltered the Chosen One during his battle with Lord Voldemort.
So cool.
The hunting of the Horcruxes. Wow.
Hang on. So he was described as... No, you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
I know I am.
He was described as being an elderly wizard who had fluffy white hair.
I know. He's older.
He was dating Mrs. Fig.
Fig, yes. They had a relationship.
Some sort of relationship.
She decorated the inside of this tent.
Because he's interested in Muggle artifacts. She's a squib.
She's a squib.
Like, there's some sort of connection here.
Right.
You can't. I mean, why? I mean, yes, we see this through Harry's eyes. And he's like, okay, I've seen this style before. It's just an elderly home style,
right,
I guess.
But
why not imagine there is? I mean, it smells of cats. So either Perkins has cats or Mr. Tibbles
is running around there.
Has peed in the corner.
Right.
Time.
Mark this spot.
Fun fact, by the way. There's some fun facts in here behind the scenes about Perkins.
Yeah.
So Professor Binns once accidentally called Harry Potter Perkins. Isn't it funny to think about maybe Perkins was a student once and he just, you know, Professor Binns doesn't even realize he's dead. So
holy smokes.
He just calls Harry Perkins.
Maybe he's sat in the same seat as Perkins.
Yeah, maybe he is.
Wow.
And then... This is fun. In the German version of the fourth book, and I don't have a German copy here in the States with me, but when I go back, I might have to check. Or you guys, if you have a German copy, if you are from Germany, Rike or Anna, if you have a copy in German, you can check if it's true. In the German version of the fourth book, Perkins was incorrectly referred to as Mrs. Perkins.
Really?
So they made the mistake of making
Frau
her
Perkins?
Female. Yeah, Frau Perkins, I guess so.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they do. I think they do. It's in the books. They don't call Arthur Herr Weasley. They
Wait
still
a second.
Leave
Wait
Mr.
a second.
Weasley in there.
Even yeah. more reasons. So you're saying when they translated this book into German, they interpreted this tent as being somewhat feminine.
Yeah.
And having feminine influences.
Yes.
Right? Which would mean, Mrs. Fig, the connection there is real, is legit, just like what we thought. You know what I'm saying?
What if Mrs. Fig is Perkins? Okay, let's move on to Harry witnessing some magical kids and wizards and witches from all over the world, which is super cool, right? It's such good world building. Just, I know what you're gonna say.
What?
You want to talk about Kevin?
Kevin. If I've told you once, I've told you 20 times. Do not play with Daddy's wand.
Please stop.
Stop
playing with Daddy's wand. You know you're not supposed to.
Go ahead, by the way, everyone listening, read this chapter again and decide for yourself what's going on here. This is the clearly, I know that Kevin probably has magic and is born to a magical family and can possibly have intent.
Right.
Holding
he just
the
wants
wand,
to
right?
do something with the slug, something fun.
Right. Something fun and has intent and thus is pressing the wand into the slug and it's growing as large as a salami.
Yep.
But I will go ahead and say that it also could be maybe that the last time that wand was used, there was some sort of enlargement charm used. And Kevin's just tapping into the leftover magic there. I also want to ask another question. At this point, did J.K. Rowling ever write a chapter where in which she was drunk or drinking?
I know we're talking about that.
Is that possible?
Is that funny? It's, I mean,
authors, I hope she did.
Authors are just people. And you're like, oh, man, I need a really good, I don't know, I'm stuck.
Right,
I have writer's block or artist block.
Let's get crazy with
let's
this
get
one.
Some drinks. And, you know, chapters are being revised later anyway. So let's just blurt out all our thoughts.
Right. And so some of that, there's like layers in there. I just wonder, I don't know if this ever gets to J.K. Rowling or not, but I would think it would be hilarious if she was just maybe in a pub or she had a few drinks late one night and she thought, here's a great idea. And then it makes it into the series.
Yeah. It'd be kind of funny. That'd be so funny to just, imagine.
So we already imagine her, in Edinburgh, in different spots, in different cafes and stuff, writing or thinking or coming up with ideas for the series, which is really awesome because we've been there ourselves and love that city so much and love Scotland so much.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to think about her there coming up with that story. And it's just neat to kind of, like, in moments like this, you have to get really creative with all these different.
Absolutely. You have to be there. I feel as an author, you have to be there. You have to imagine yourself at the campsite. What would it look like? Families with little kids rising first. Of course, that's the case, right? Because your kids are active. And then there's a ministry wizard who's upset because, I guess the parents are having a lie-in because their girls are out here with broomsticks. Broomsticks flying around. Even though we are supposed to act like muggles.
Isn't that relatable, though?
Yes, right? Absolutely
I mean, every time I go over to my sister's and she's dead asleep and it's like 9 o'clock, right? She's having a lie-in and that house is a wreck. The things that are made by my niece and nephew and things that are done, you wake up and it's just like, what happened for the last 3 hours? They've been up since 5. Mm-hmm. They're going crazy. But I do think you're right. Look, we're always telling kids in their writing to think about their senses. You know, what do you see? What do you smell? What do you hear? To get into your, imagery, right? So you want to create some imagery in our minds as the readers as to what's going on. And this chapter is a really great example of that, where she goes through and you can see, you hear things, you see things, and it just is, it's spectacular. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, and I think it's cool if we even see the Salem Witches Institute.
Let's go.
Just looked it up. It's actually, people were speculating for a while, is this a school or what kind of organization is it? And J.K. Rowling has stated that the Salem Witches Institute is a play on the Women's Institutes of the United Kingdom, and these organizations seek to provide women with educational opportunities and to campaign on issues of importance to women and their communities. So
let's go.
They were just, a women's organization.
Yeah, like, it's cool. I figured so. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Yeah, I like that. And it's not a school because later on we find out Ilvermorny is the
boy.
American Wizarding School.
Has anyone listened to this?
Are you guys listening?
So what is it called? Now I'm going to totally blank on it. It's the Crucible.
Yes, has the anyone Crucible. Ever, yeah. Like,
that's the Salem Witches.
Right.
We do that every year at high school. Our kids come in. They're like, they're so confused. There's so many characters. So much craziness going on. That play is wicked and wild, and it is fascinating.
Yeah.
So every time I hear about the Salem Witches and the Salem Witch Trials, it's just like, I would be cool to hear more about that from an Ilvermorny perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
By the way, real quick side note here, talking about school plays. Today, this morning, we walked around a little town, city, not city, it's a town, right?
Yes, town. Yeah.
They had a play, and unfortunately, we just missed it because we went out for breakfast and we saw their advertisement for it. Mm-hmm. They had Puffs playing at their school theater.
Yeah, it's wild.
I couldn't believe it. We're going to post a picture later on Instagram, show you guys proof that we saw this. So that means we're thinking, that means the scripts are out there. More schools might pick it up. You should go ahead and drop it to your drama teacher.
Can
we like have this play in school?
Like, no, straight up, I'm going to. I'm going to suggest it. I'm like, this would be
so funny.
Awesome. Yeah. Was there, I was thinking, is there a musical element to that? Because
I think there is another musical out there. I mean, aside from
Cursed Child.
Cursed Child is a play also. It's not a musical. But I think there is also a Harry Potter musical out there.
Yeah, because throughout the year they'll do like the musical.
Right.
Like they'll
right.
do musicals, then they'll do just your play in normal thing. So.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Salem
Witchcraft Trials. Yep.
Okay.
Foreign Wizards, international event. Oh yeah, and you were suggesting, you know, we give you a little audio sound bites of what they might hear.
This is as they're walking past
past some tents. Maybe we walk past the big group of witches and wizards from the Black Forest, from the Schwarzwald.
Yeah,
right, from Germany.
And they were probably saying something like this: Wer denkst du wird gewinnen?
Ich denke, dass Bulgarien gewinnt, aber Aiden Lynch, der irische Sucher, den Schnatz fängt.
So, there you go. That's probably what they heard when they were walking by
a few different
tents. Pretty cool. Because, again, it's one of those things you're creating some imagery and that would be the sounds.
Yeah.
Sounds that you hear. You hear the conversation. So that's alluded to in this chapter, that there's these foreign witches and wizards inside of their tents having excited conversations about the upcoming match.
Absolutely. And a fun fact here, they used later on when they go to the Bulgarian campsite, they use the word bedeckt, which is absolutely German.
Really?
It seems like they just added the ED for an English version of it. It means that something is covered.
Yeah.
Is that what bedeckt means?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like someone stole it from
German. It's decked out. It's bedeckt.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Okay, I get it. So if you're, you know, that you're bedeckt, something is like, covered in something.
Covered.
You cover it up. Or,
right.
Yeah.
If you're like a lot of, like you could be bedecked in different, I don't know, costumes or like stuff all over your face. You could have like makeup on your face or something.
Yeah.
Or I don't know.
Yeah, the prefix BE though is very German. We use it a lot.
Really?
BE, yeah.
Why do you guys get to use it? Why can't other people use it, huh?
Yeah, you can.
Actually, we do, right? So.
And we still, I mean, I teach my kids all the time, like sometimes English words that we just use, we just steal it from you, right? They ask me, they have to write a comic in my class, and then they ask, oh, what do I say if someone says cool? Well, I'm like, cool.
And they're like, cool. Yeah. Thanks for Outkirk.
We don't even need you.
Yeah, what are you here
thanks
for?
Thanks for nothing.
Yeah, what are you here for? Like, I mean, that's
danke
easy.
Für nichts.
Das ist fantastisch. Okay. But I will say, though, that in the origins of the English language, like we talk about it being a Germanic language.
It is,
right?
Absolutely.
And it's really derived a lot, you know, from
Old English is very much like Old German. Like, they're very close.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With them, they have different cases and stuff that you now don't have anymore. Which is also, I love English for that. It's, yeah, I love it.
Get your cases right, people. If you're in Germany, you got to get them right, okay? Is it der, das, or...
That's the articles, but then those articles will
match
according to a case.
That's what I was talking about. That's what I was talking about.
That's a whole different
concept. Rika, you know I know this stuff.
That's a whole different concept.
All right.
That English speakers, it's hard for them to grasp.
I live with a German teacher, you guys, okay? Sprechen Sie Deutsch over here, okay? Ich lerne Deutsch.
But yeah, no, Ez wanted to talk, oh, sir, Bill wanted to talk about Seamus and Dean.
Seamus and Dean, my guys.
They meet them.
They
get water.
I love that they meet them and that Dean got kind of picked up and went with Seamus, right? That he got to go to the World Cup, because you think of Harry and Ron and their relationship and their friendship there, and the fact
that these
Gryffindors are all in the same sort of room up there, and they're nearby our golden trio all the time, and we hear about them quite a bit, but we don't. What happens when Harry walks out of the room?
Right.
What do Seamus and Dean talk about? Mm-hmm. What do they say? Do they ever go on their own adventures? Are they getting in trouble, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did they get here?
That's what we were talking about. Yes.
Yeah.
So my theory was, since they both have Muggle roots, right? I think both of them. Dean has this weird story that we read about the other day, that he thought he was Muggle-born, but then he was not, or something. I can't remember.
I love how you bring up things. You're like,
it's so bad. No, sometimes we talk about and research things, and then we forget, because there's so much. But yeah, they both have some sort of Muggle roots. And we thought about, okay, the Ministry has to think about all the logistics, how people get to this big event without raising Muggle suspicions. And some of them have to use portkeys, some of them can apparate, but some of them, a small amount, also has to use Muggle transportation. And we thought, why not actually ask the people who have Muggles in their family to use Muggle transportation? Because A, they definitely know how to dress as Muggles.
Yeah.
And B, they know how to use their transportation,
sure,
how to pay for tickets, and all that stuff. So I would assume, since Dean and Seamus both also can't apparate yet, they might have used something like that. I don't know. We're not sure, but it's just fun to speculate. How do they get here? What did they do prior to that? Because it's their summer too. And you feel like they had some sort of similar situation going on. Maybe Dean's parents are not there, and maybe he spent the week prior to the World Cup with Seamus, and they seem to be all set up already. So they seem to have come a bit earlier. Mr. Weezy says it. If you want cheaper tickets, you have to come almost 2 weeks in advance.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting to me, because you're like, you get the cheaper tickets, but then you have to pay for 2 weeks to stay there.
And you're missing work.
You can't work.
Right. But, well, maybe there are, maybe it's that much cheaper though.
Yeah.
Maybe. It totals right. up to be yeah. cheaper.
I mean, it seems like
wild. I will mention something. So talking about Seamus and Dean, mm-hmm. I think about Jenny for a second, because Jenny is, she doesn't go with them. Right.
Yeah.
So where is Jenny? What did Jenny do during this time? Is she just in the tent? Is she with Fred and George? Are they
maybe
just chilling?
Meeting some of her own friends.
Did she go walk around? Right. Did she
probably.
And some girlfriends walk around? And did they come across Dean and Seamus? And what conversation did Dean have with Jenny? Clearly, they're having conversations and talks, because we know that by the end of their fifth year, they're dating.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well into the sixth year.
They kind of like each other.
This is early. Yeah. Too early for them to be really dating and stuff. But the conversations start to happen.
Yeah.
Right?
And you're looking up to your upperclassmen. Right? Jenny's a little younger.
Yeah.
And it's just cute. Yeah. To think about it.
And so I could just see, and Seamus, he's always up to no good. What explosions happened? You know, how many times was he reprimanded?
Oh my God, we saw the reel the other day. I think it was Half Blood University who posted the reel of Seamus at Ollivander's finding his perfect wand. And it was just an old man explode. Like everything is exploding around him. It was fun.
Yeah. So he was, he's probably been, if he's made some explosions, or if he's experimenting with things, I'm sure his mother told him, like, hey, watch yourself, because the ministry's running around trying to keep everybody in order. But I just think from their perspective, it's really cool. And I think if you're fan fiction, or if we get extra things in the TV show and you want to build in some stuff for other actors to go and do stuff, either they go with Harry and Ron and they didn't actually in the books, that's fine. Sometimes I think you need to do that, because you have you're paying these individuals to be on screen. So they'll probably do some stuff like that where they'll go along, and we'll hear more of those extended conversations.
Yes. I love the thought of, nowadays shows often have these different storylines, right? Of different characters. Yes, we have our main storyline with the main character, but we want those side character storylines that also have their own problems, their own dilemmas, their own things to solve, and character development to go through. So, I'm so excited for that. talking about dilemmas, I love how the Crumb, Hermione, Ron triangle dilemma is being set up right here in a
so crazy
fun way. Like, it's the opposite, right? We start off the opposite. Hermione is absolutely turned off by all the pictures of Crumb.
Right.
Where he's really grumpy looking, and he's like, okay, not sure about this
guy.
Yeah. He doesn't seem very friendly.
Yep.
And then Ron is totally fanboying over Crumb. And
he's a genius.
Yeah.
He's brill.
Mm-hmm.
He's
absolutely
brilliant.
Bro. So that's kind of fun that it's going to absolutely flip later on.
Yeah.
And then we meet other people like Oliver Wood. And it's cute how Oliver Wood, who probably talked about Harry a whole lot, how much of a prodigy to him Harry is, right? A seeker that... They won the last year. Last year they won. That was Oliver's last year.
Yeah.
And they won the Quidditch Cup. How exciting. And one of his star players was Harry Potter. And now he can have his parents meet him. And he also announces that he's now a professional Quidditch player.
Right.
He just signed his contract.
Yeah, which is awesome. I think that when you look back at the Gryffindor team, Harry and Oliver are your pro-level guys. Jenny, obviously, later on. But... like during Oliver's time, I feel like these. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know much about the like Spinnet and Katie Bell and the rest. I'm not so sure that they're good, but they're not like ready to go like aspirations to go pro. Neither Harry wasn't, but you can kind of tell he probably could have.
Yeah,
he absolutely probably could have.
He just had other priorities in his life that kind of had. I mean, let's think of a second. Had he been a normal kid,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
Voldemort, just a normal, just raised normally, he might have gone into Quidditch.
Might have, yeah.
Because he didn't have this.
He's a natural
affection with, or like the need to go into the Defense Against Dark Arts field.
Right.
As
See,
much.
This was the thing that he went into, and McGonagall spotted right away. Like he's a natural. He's talented. Yeah. He's never had any experience on a broom whatsoever, and all of a sudden, boom. Here he is. He's that good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was something that he easily could walk into. I think it's cool to see these characters, these students go into different classes and they become naturals, you know, in that particular area. Like Neville Herbology. Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was. Yeah. I don't know. And then you think of divination. And if you're interested in it, and does it come more naturally to you? And like, is that your thing?
Yeah.
So for him, Quidditch was like his thing. Then by necessity, Defense Against the Dark Arts becomes his thing.
His thing, yeah.
Because he's the chosen
one. He has to. Yeah. So. His life depends on it, literally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this was a fun little excursion around the campsites. We see lots of people there, and they come back, and they haven't even started a fire. Why? Because Mr. Weasley is having the time of his life trying to light a fire with a match like a muggle would, and he can't get it. And Hermione kindly helps him, shows him how to use matches, even though I gotta say it's not easy to use matches to, even as a when you're a kid and you first time learn how to use them, it's not easy to get them lit, so
right.
I don't blame him if you've never used them before. But he's just having fun, and they light the fire. Percy and Charlie and Bill, they later arrive, all good, and then lots of ministry officials, they walk by, and all of them greet Arthur. They know Arthur. Arthur seems to be, even though Malfoy likes to make fun of him, but everyone knows him, and I feel like someone like Arthur, who has this passion for his field, his department, his office, right, his the misuse of Muggle artifacts, I think he puts off that positive energy because that's his passion project, and I feel like this carries over to people. That's why people like him. I feel like,
yeah, for sure.
Malfoy can make fun of him all day, but you can see people respect him for his,
for sure. Yeah.
That someone is a specialist in this field, and not a lot of people probably want to do it.
Yeah.
So
he's an expert at what he does, and he's powerful.
Yes.
He comes from a very powerful family. The Weasleys are your pure blood family, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he's, it's just his thing. It may be quirky, but again, he's one of those guys that gets along with everybody, and he's scoring tickets with like Ludo Bagman, right?
Yeah.
And he's kind of rubbing shoulders with all these guys, and he's just comfortable in his own skin. So people are like, I don't think they think less of him. They actually, he's just one of their mates, one of the guys that works at the office, and it's just, got to do your job, provide for your family. There you go. Yeah. They're off and running.
Yeah.
Even to the point where, like, so let's go. So real quickly. So you have Cuthbert Mockridge comes by, head of the Goblin liaison office. Mm-hmm. Here comes Gilbert Wimple, right? He is with the Committee on Experimental Charms. Think about that committee for a second, right? Experimental Charms.
Coming up with new spells?
Coming up with them, yeah. So pretty cool.
That's so cool.
Right? He had all they talk about his horns, the horns that he had for a while.
Seamus might go into that field.
Good, for sure.
I don't know if you feel like.
Yeah, that would be a great field for him because he's always messing around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he probably has figured out how to shield himself from things that go wrong or you know, things that, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. And then Arnold Peasgood, I think he's an Obliviator, right? So a member of the Accidental Magic Reversal Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bode and is it Croaker?
Croaker, yeah.
Bode and Croaker are Unspeakables.
Unspeakables.
Yeah.
And those names are dropped here. And I looked up, one of them becomes pretty important later on. It's quick. You just know that, okay, there's two people working as Unspeakables. You're like, okay, whatever. Don't know what that is.
Sure.
Mr. Weasley doesn't even know what they're up to because it's highly classified stuff. And Bode Broderick, is his name Broderick? Broderick Bode. We meet him later. Next book, he ran into his colleague Arthur, who was in a rush to reach the courtroom with Harry Potter. So they run into him. Next book for the hearing, and then he becomes a target of the Death Eaters because Voldemort was seeking a prophecy, right? He becomes a target for them. And Avery is one of the Death Eaters, he informs the Dark Lord that an Unspeakable would be able to fetch the prophecy for him after an attempt to force Sturges Podmore to steal it while under the Imperius Curse failed. So this is all stuff next year we're going to hear just in the background, what's going on outside of Hogwarts, right? We know there's a weapon that Voldemort is after, and his name, Bode, is being dropped all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Malfoy, who is, of course, one of Voldemort's spies at the Ministry, he places Bode under the Imperius Curse to force him to attempt the same theft of the prophecy. And he notes that Bode showed unusual resistance to the Imperius Curse, which Augustus Rookwood suggested may have been because Bode, being an Unspeakable, knew what would happen if he tried to remove one of the prophecies. And then everyone believes he's just been injured in an accident at his workplace, and no one really knows what they do, right? So he can't talk about it. So they see him at the St. Mungo's Hospital. Mungo's.
Yeah.
St. Mungo's. His injury seemed very severe. Anyway, so this is all backstory on him that he's going to be very important later. There's even stuff on legacy on him. So just to prime you guys for that name, Bode, we're definitely going to hear his name next book a lot.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. That was a lot. I know. I'm sorry. It's just fun looking into these side characters. Actually, this whole chapter is called Bagman and Crouch, so we haven't even gotten to the main characters here yet of the chapter.
Yeah.
But what was your first impression of Ludo Bagman?
Cheerful dude. Seems cool. He doesn't really care about security at all. He's like, it's fine. Obliviate him. Okay. What's the big deal, guys? Yeah. You know, it's the Quidditch World Cup. It's here. Celebrate it. And he seems to be a guy who lives in the moment. You know,
Yeah. He's
just like, this is the moment's now. Let's enjoy it. Collect get your wages in, you know, like your wagers, I should say, bets. And I don't know, it just seems like a good dude. People seem to really like him.
Right. Arthur's a big fan.
Right. He has his legacy of playing for England and everything. So, and he's excited about other things that are not even just Quidditch, right? He's excited about the Triwizard Tournament, for example, right? Anything competitive, he's your guy. So seems pretty cool.
Yeah. But he seems super nice, like you said, and super fun, super like, let's go. I'm so excited for all this. He's ahoy. You know, he's just like a happy to be there and gives positive, good energy to wherever he goes. And he rose to the post of the head of department of magical games and sports. But his career at the Ministry ends in the mid 1995. Right now we're in 1994. So next year, career over, because he had to go on the run from goblins to whom he owed a substantial amount of gold. He is big time into gambling and it ruins his life later.
Yeah, it's bad.
And I think one of the saddest parts here is that he was a beater. Okay. Mm-hmm. That was his position. He was a professional, one of the best Quidditch players that the English national team ever had. He was a beater. The Weasley twins, what's their position?
Yeah,
they're beaters. They were. He was probably one of their idols, right?
Yeah.
Like, they probably looked up to him.
Yeah.
Their dad really talks highly or speaks highly of Ludo all the time.
Yeah.
So it kind of breaks my heart how they lose all their money to him and he's just being so rude. And I think they even try to like send him letters all the time, hey, what about our money? And then they get this fake money, and he did the same thing to the goblins. And he lost everything due to gambling, and it's sad because that's a reality
that does happen, and that's an issue in sports quite a bit. You've got referees gambling, players gambling, and then now it's a huge deal here in the States. I mean, I've got teachers down the hallway who are like talking
everyone,
about
right?
Yeah, they're like, hey, they're trying to figure it out, and it's just it's crazy. Yeah. I am not a fan of it and won't get involved in it. I saw something really sad. Once upon a time, I went up to like Niagara Falls, and there was a casino in there, and I'd never seen anything like it. I was 16 or 17 years old.
Yeah.
And to go in there and see people who, it was so sad, you know, because I found out from people who were there, like they're here every day.
Right. It's not just the occasional, oh, let's just have fun. We have some extra pocket money, whatever. Right. It's just a, you know, a fun way to get excited about it. But
it's an addiction. It's a habit
a real addiction. Yeah.
It can be really bad. And if you, it can consume you if you're not careful. Yeah. So there you go.
And that's what happened to Ludo.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
You were talking about the Weasley twins. And I thought that was really cool. When we talked in the car, you said they seem like it's so odd that they make this bet, right? And they bet all of their pocket money. Mm-hmm. And I was like, they must have had a backup plan. They must have known like the odds that this happens are so slim. I feel like, how are they so disappointed that they lost all their money if they bet on something so unlikely? But then you had a different thought about it.
Oh, some people make the case that the Weasley twins, that they are good Quidditch players. They understand Quidditch, mm-hmm. and they knew that Victor Krum was very talented.
Yes.
It's very likely that he will catch the Snitch. But also, the Irish were a great team.
Right, and the Chasers were really good.
Right. The only thing that's going to, they need to outscore Victor Krum, sort of, right?
Yeah.
And they knew that Krum would get the Snitch. And so there's this logic behind it that they just could see through that and perceive it and that they made a really good call.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that maybe, we don't know if other people place other bets. But Ludo himself, he's a professional. He watches these sports and he was basically like, never going to happen.
Right. He is the head of the department. Right.
No way. Like this is, so to think that the twins had that good insight into international Quidditch and to say, I mean, clearly they make the call against this guy who is like a professional, who's betting everything, by the way, who would have thought about that very thing, would have thought about how good Victor Krum is, would have thought about the Irish and their tactics and all those different scenarios that people might be wagering on. So the fact that they nail it right on the head perfectly, and it's so ridiculous. It's not like it's just like, oh, good bet. And it was like a kind of a safe or mediumly safe. I don't know what the word would be, like if it's somewhat safe. They nail it. How?
Yeah.
How do they nail
it?
How do they know that it's going to be this way? And I really think that they have some access either to the in divination class.
Right.
They looked for it. I think they knew it was coming up. They knew the Quidditch World Cup was coming up. I think they looked in the crystal ball. I think you had brought up possibly the Ron scenario that Ron himself.
Oh, yeah. That was very
This
silly.
Is a crazy one. It's a silly one, but it's the idea that Ron himself might mean when he's in divination, he seems to be predicting the future. He seems
without knowing
he's doing it. He's doing it, and if they caught on to that, and they maybe Ron's thinking about the Quidditch World Cup and having these dreams and whatever,
talking in his sleep, and they have to sleep in his room. So
so they figured it out. But or I was like, did they get like a time turner? Did they go forward in time? could you go that far? I don't know. How did they know exactly that this was going to happen? Because they confidently,
absolutely, here's all our money,
all of our money. They put everything on it, so not even holding anything back. So they were that sure. And it lets you know that there was an extended scene where they figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think J.K. Rowling will write something that shows that the twins, this is one of those things that didn't make the cut, that's not in the draft, but I guarantee you these mischievous guys figured out a way to subvert the system. That's what they did. That's what they did at Hogwarts. They had the Marauder's Map.
Yes.
Like they are known for doing that, for cutting corners or figuring out other ways to learn things. And so this would be a hugely illegal thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So how they did it, I don't know, but
I'm thinking, though, in general. That makes you wonder, how is gambling even a thing in the wizarding world with divination and all that, you know?
Right. How specific is it? I mean, it's somebody making a prophecy about the Quidditch World Cup, and are people paying for that? Yeah. That would be a ring of pretty wild stuff.
People just say, you know, how they say it's very, very rare that you have actual seer blood. And those seers most likely are known to the public, and maybe they are forbidden to gamble.
I'm sure they are. There's laws against that
but
kind
then
of stuff.
They can make money by telling other people.
For sure. Yeah.
What's up?
It's a rigged system. That is literally what goes on in professional sports sometimes.
Mm-hmm. By the way, sorry. Talking about rigged systems. Here, full circle to Ludo Bagman again. Did you know there was a little bit of animosity between him and Crouch? Because Barty Crouch, he shows up in this. Percy's going nuts. This is his idol. He's getting so excited. So Crouch shows up looking for Ludo. And they seem on good terms in this. Mm-hmm. But if you go back in history, when Crouch was during his prime time in the ministry, when he was trying to catch all the Death Eaters or people who worked for Voldemort after the First Wizarding War, Ludo was one of the people who were put on trial for giving information about the ministry to Augustus Rookwood. But according to Ludo, he didn't know that Rookwood was a Death Eater. He had been friends, or his family had been friends with Rookwood's family or something. And that's why he was giving him information by just talking about getting Ludo a job at the ministry. Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, I give you some information. You give me a job at the ministry.
Yeah.
But he didn't know he was a Death Eater.
Right.
And Barty wasn't buying it, and he tried to place Bagman in Azkaban for this exchange information. But Ludo was cleared of all charges. Why? Partially because him being such a popular Quidditch player.
Yeah.
And there was even a witch in the jury who stood up and congratulated him for his rather impressive play in the previous Quidditch match, with another, you know, cheering him. And Ludo was never accused of allegiance with the Death Eaters again.
Yeah, I bet it was. I mean, Barty was a little crazy, right? He was really coming after everybody.
Right.
They said he kind of had a hot head, and he was, and if it even smelled dark, he was on it, you know? So I don't think that Ludo was really doing that intentionally. You kind of see who he is here. He doesn't care a whole lot about that. He wants to get ahead. He wants to kind of get a job, be in a position of prestige. He's on the Quidditch team. Hey, one day down the line, sure, whatever, I'll tell you what, you know. Like passing over information or whatever. So cool. That's interesting. Not cool that, I mean, that his fame was sort of rigging things for him or I don't know, but it happens. You know,
it's also a good setup. Like Ludo being kind of like an interesting character. We have Ludo and Crouch, who are important for the whole Triwizard Tournament later. And as if you read it for the first time, there is this big mystery who put Harry's name in, right? So he would be one of, in the movie, obviously not because he's not in the movie, but in the book, you're like, oh, this character seems too like nice. And then we learn about his weird gambling problem and the twins only get fake gold from him. So he would be one of the suspects, possible suspects to be shady.
Shady. Anytime a new book comes out, you were looking for the people that you didn't know that were newly introduced, and like, how do they play a role and what's going on? So he's actually, meant to be someone that we suspect a little bit as we get into this.
Yeah.
But
Last thing he really, or two more things. We have Crouch obviously showing up, and they talk about Bertha Jorkins for a second, and Ludo's like, Bertha,
She'll
be fine. She's known for being a little confused and having no sense of orientation. No one's really worried about her, which this also makes you a little suspicious later on. Again, when you talk about Ludo being a possible Death Eater, maybe, that you could suspect as someone who put Harry's name in. Yeah, I'm repeating myself. Sorry. Let's move on. Crouch is there. They go off to see the Bulgarians because Crouch is good with languages and they need to solve a problem there.
Yeah.
And then the afternoon goes on. So this is, they arrived early in the morning, ate lunch. Now it's getting afternoon and the Quidditch match is actually in the evening at night when it's dark. And as soon as like darkness, like, or the dusk falls, right, merchants are showing up and they buy these cool omni-oculars that help you watch a scene again, basically play a repeat of the scene, something that
instant replay
now on the TV with sports games all the time when we want to take a closer look at what happened here. And so nice of Harry to buy three pairs for all three of them, because he doesn't care, he has a lot of money and he just wants, like, Ron was kind of like down because he spent his money on other toys and things and merch. And just Harry doesn't care. And he's like, you're not getting anything for birthdays, Christmas. Don't feel bad about it. And it's kind of cute, this moment between them.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to read is just something that I thought was so, so beautiful. When they get ready to go to the game. So it says they all are wearing their Irish gear because they're cheering for Ireland, right?
Yeah.
Of course. And then a deep booming gong sounded somewhere beyond the woods. And at once, green and red lanterns blazed into life in the trees, lighting a path to the field. "It's time," said Mr. Weasley, looking as excited as any of them. "Come on, let's go."
It's pretty cool. Yeah.
just the thought of the lanterns lighting up in the trees all of a sudden that guide you to the field. It just gives me chills.
Yeah. Yep. It's neat. It's that you can feel the excitement. Yeah. And this is definitely, it's so new. And so this chapter is so inventive. And this whole idea about a Quidditch World Cup is so exciting because we know the excitement of a World Cup in soccer. And everyone can kind of relate to that. So you're like, well, this is freaking awesome. I mean,
the energy around it. Yep.
Yeah. I think when stories, especially when they're in sci-fi or fantasy, mm-hmm. and you can find things that you relate to, especially big, large events like this, that's sometimes hard to do. But this one is definitely relatable. And we've been growing to love Quidditch over the first three books. And here we are going to watch some professionals and we see our characters loving it. And it's almost like I don't really know what could go wrong. I mean, this seems too good, right?
In the Harry Potter book. Yeah, that's what Harry says, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. like how, and then so we know what happens, but it's such a good build to really happy, good energy. Mm-hmm. Harry's having a great time. Yeah. This is not like a normal book. What the heck? I mean, this book is full of like pep and cheer and good.
Right from the start,
Right, mm-hmm. and we'll have a quick little glimpse of some negative energy here after the Quidditch World Cup, but great chapter.
Yes, agreed. All right, then we just have Owl Post to cover a little bit. We want to point out again that you guys can now leave comments directly on Spotify. So if you're listening through Spotify, they will allow you to leave a comment right underneath an episode. And it's great, even if you go back to an earlier episode, we can see them. We can sort them by new comments, so we'll see all your comments in the future. And it's super cool. Thank you to Josh, who already used this feature in our last episode. He says, two notes about the episode. First one, Anne with an E, is fantastic. My wife and I have watched it multiple times, so that's super cool. Love it. Yep. And I love that they also share this. Like, it's just a so good, a feel-good show, right? I mean, there's lots of drama in there, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But hey, when Matthew gets on the horse to ride off to save the day, you get chills.
I mean, it's that dramatic. Like when he's on the horse and going, seriously. I mean, I'm like, let's go, Matthew. Get this done. By the way, we love that show, Josh, so much that we're probably going to head up to Prince Edward's Island at some point over the summer. So
we are
obsessed with it, and we're listening to the books.
Actually go to places, and we have experienced that with Harry Potter, right? If you go to the places in Scotland, it's magical. So and then second thing, Accio is Latin and pronounced Accio with like a KK sound, so thank you for letting us know. It's I should have known as a former Latin student. I had Latin for probably 7 years, so you're right, she does use a lot of Latin in her spells, so it should be pronounced Accio. Mm-hmm. So from here on out, we know
Accio.
Not Accio. Accio.
Accio.
Accio outro.
Okay. Well, friends, hey, thank you guys again. Happy Labor Day. Happy Star Wars weekend. Hopefully you're celebrating. You know, if you do, by the way, tag us in anything. Just in case you're doing any Star Wars celebrations, I want to know about them. And happy what is this, pre-Quidditch? This is the preliminary, like next
World
chapter.
Cup,
the next
final.
One is the, right, the cup, right?
Yes, it's the final.
So that's where we're headed. But friends, thank you guys so much. We do appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in to Shell College Radio 94.7 COZY. We hope you're going to join us in the future. We do thoroughly enjoy meeting new positive Potter people that don't behave like babbling, bumbling bands of baboons. If you don't miss out on the next episode, then be sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review and follow over on social media at Fleur and Bill.
If you truly enjoy our content, consider supporting our growing wizarding family on Patreon or on Apple Premium. You'll find all the links down below. And thank you so much to all our current patrons. We appreciate you to Luna and back. On our next reread episode, we will discuss Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, Chapter 8, the Quidditch World Cup. So make sure you tune back in next time, and until then, have a great rest of your week. Thanks for joining us in our shell cottage today. We know it's not much, but it's home.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.